One way or another, we will have world government. The question is whether it shall be by consent or by conquest.
So they have a really delicate balance to walk between keeping us relatively fearful, but not so fearful that we stop what we're doing and really examine how it is that they've been waging.
There are a lot of people who lie and get away with it.
And we will in fact find weapons or evidence of weapons programs that are conclusive.
I don't think we'll discover anything myself.
It appears that there were not weapons of mass destruction there.
You said you knew where they were.
I did not.
We know where they are. They're in the area around Tikrit and Baghdad and east, west, south, and north.
Well, first of all, I haven't lied.
There are a lot of people who lie and get away with it.
Talking about lies and your allegation that there was bulletproof evidence of ties between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. Was that a lie?
Intelligence gathered by this and other governments leaves no doubt that the Iraq regime continues to possess and conceal some of the most lethal weapons ever devised.
Are people going to find out the truth? And the truth will say that this intelligence is good intelligence, no doubt in my mind.
I don't know anybody that I can think of who has contended that the Iraqis had nuclear weapons.
And we believe he has, in fact, reconstituted nuclear weapons.
Saddam Hussein is determined to get his hands on a nuclear bomb.
We cannot wait for the final proof.
He's got him. He's got him.
The smoking gun.
He's got him.
That could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Colin Powell didn't lie.
My colleagues, every statement I make today is backed up by sources, solid sources. These are not assertions. What we're giving you are facts and conclusions based on solid intelligence.
He has not developed any significant capability with respect to weapons of mass destruction. He is unable to project conventional power against his neighbors.
Are people going to find out the truth?
I have not suggested there's a connection between Iraq and 9/11.
You have said in the past that it was, quote, pretty well confirmed.
No, I never said that.
Okay. I never said that.
No, it's absolutely not. What I said was it's been pretty well confirmed that he did go to Prague and he did meet with a senior official of the Iraqi intelligence service.
Saddam Hussein aids and protects terrorists, including members of Al-Qaeda. Secretly and without fingerprints, he could provide one of his hidden weapons to terrorists or help them develop their own. What did Iraq have to do with what?
And so it goes for Mr. Bush. And let's just hope that lies in the past and that such things lie in the past. You are tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, New York City, WBAI at 99.5 FM. And that program, Heart of Mind with Catherine Davis, was brought to you with portions on recording. So it's faded down for that reason, because this program is live and this is, or this shall be, okay, let's see if I can avoid major technical grolix-ups this program. We'll explain that shortly. And, see, there are three computers in here. There's this little knobby that I have to hit that brings the computer up, and then the screen blanks out and all that, and I become lousy. I used to be a great engineer. There was a time when I could just howl. Sometimes I still get it.
Thank you.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, Marathon Edition. My name is Jim Freund. This is a weekly, well, supposedly weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and, yes, the imagination. With us this morning, Douglas Cohen, and by Skype, John Joseph Adams, discussing their book entitled... Oh, did you miss the title of the book? Well, Grolix, you. We're blank. Grolix is a blank. If I really told you, WTF it was about, I would be in, well, at 1:30 in New York, I wouldn't, or even 10:30 in California, which we're about to be attaching to, we would be in safe harbor. But we don't want to test the gods of the FCC. So since all of this stuff has to happen on the air, let's see what happens. Our Douglas Cohen is here. Say hi, Douglas.
Hi, Douglas.
Okay, now try that again.
Hi, Jim.
Okay, let me... Yeah, it's on. It's live, but it's not...
Better?
I don't like the sound of... Say better again.
Better?
No. Hold on. Try it yet again.
Better, better?
Yes, better, better.
All right.
Not as good as these mics. You notice they're actually different microphones? It's not supposed to be that way.
Mm.
We should all have equality in microphones. Okay. Now, let us, using the magic of a computer, try to get in touch with John Joseph Adams. And I don't want to just save it. You would think that double-clicking... Oh, okay, there's a... Here we go, there's a... Oh, there's that noise. John Joseph Adams is ringing. Internet connection problem. Are you there, John?
Hello.
Ah!
Hey, John.
Hi, Doug.
Okay, so it seems to be working. What do you know? I mean, the sound quality is for Grolix, but otherwise, we seem to be no. When you're connected, it's New York telephone. But that well, for those of us old enough. All righty. So, what the Grolix is that? I'm naming a book, and the word isn't Grolix. It's a piece of iconography, which I have learned is called a Grolix. And we are using Mort Walker as an authority on the topic and his book called The Lexicon of Comicana or Comicana, one of those. And there he points out, and he didn't coin it, but clearly he was is and a historian. He appears to be alive. I looked in Wikipedia and has his birth date as being somewhere over 90 years ago, but I'm pleased to say there is no end date. So he's with us. So, yeah, these silences, by the way, are for you guys.
So maybe we should explain the title a bit more then.
Yeah, maybe so. Gee, you still sound a little quiet to me. You may need to, get
a little closer to the mic.
Yeah. Let's.
How's this?
That's much better.
Okay, so as Jim said, the title is "What the Grolix Is That?" And Grolix is basically those symbols you see in the balloons and comic strips when characters are cursing. So the title isn't literally "What the Grolix Is That?" as opposed to "What the..."
Literally, figuratively.
Literally, figuratively, yes.
It's a figure.
But the title is "What the..." and then you see those symbols, which are Grolix, is that.
So it's actually a pound sign, an at sign, an ampersand, and a percent sign in the case of this book there. Mileage may vary.
Correct. But that is the title, and it's probably a little puzzling and a little intriguing at the same time when you first see that title. And if you were to look
it
up,
intentional.
It's quite intentional. And if you were to look it up, you would see a crazy looking monster on the cover of the book where
none of which are the editors or the writers.
None of them are the editors or the writers so far as we know. But if you saw that, you would probably say, "What the heck is that? What the hell is that?" Or
"WTF is that?"
Exactly. Or
"What
insert
the
something
is that?
What the Jim Freund is that?" So, you know, you just insert whatever word you want, but "What the Grolix Is That?" is basically the idea.
Yeah. So I know that's not. I you guys tend to say "What the blank is that?"
What the blank? What the bleep? Got to call it something.
Bleep is good. Bleep is in time honored. Radio tradition.
Yeah, if I was being fancy with audio, I would actually try to, like, if we were recording this, I would my preferred way of doing it, of saying the title, would be to just to say the F word, but then actually bleep it out, because like I always find that funnier than actually people just saying the F word for
yes.
some reason.
Like, well,
so
yeah, except that we had somebody many years ago, a good friend named Gary Freed, who's no longer with us. Gary tried to bleep himself out with the word "bull bleep," and he accidentally inverted where the bleep
Uh-oh.
Went.
Oh man!
And he ended up saying "What the bleep, Grolix?"
Gotcha.
Or live on the air, and
yep.
About four people walked into the control room and looked at Gary and said, "That wasn't what you intended to say, was it?" And, you know, Gary put down the J he was smoking. What? So, understandable. We had to give him the air check. Let's do a couple. First of all, we need to do a disclaimer, which is that in another world, actually a very related world, I am a consultant employee of John Joseph Adams.
Indeed. Jim provides the audio editing services for the Lightspeed and Nightmare Magazine podcasts.
And I'm the host of the Lightspeed.
Yes, and the host of the Lightspeed podcast. Yep.
Yes, and as of last week, or the week before, I was a performer.
Indeed, yes.
And I thought that really sucked. I'm serious. I'm absolutely... the author liked it. He sent me a complimentary email. Scott Power, was it? No.
Stephen Power.
Stephen Power. Thank you. Stephen Power sent actually not an email, a complimentary tweet.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was awful. I'm not going to ask you what you thought. I asked Stefan Rudnicki, and I haven't heard back, which which probably actually means he's busy.
Right.
And I've also audio edited one of your anthologies.
Mm-hmm.
Wastelands 2.
Right.
Yeah, but that was actually, I wasn't working for you.
Right, you're working for Skyboat.
Yes, correct. Skyboat Media, who published Chatting Science Fiction, a collection of interviews by Jim Freund. Well, what
must have been a bestseller.
You know what happened last week? This week, I was shocked beyond belief. I've gotten something that I never thought I would see in my entire life.
Are you going to say a royalty check?
Yes.
How did I guess?
I wouldn't have guessed. somebody bought this Grolix? I'm actually very, very pleased and proud. But it's really largely a vanity project and an act of mercy from Skybox to have put this out.
Well, don't spend it all in one place, Jim.
It's actually worth a couple of nice meals.
Oh, nice.
For Barbara and I. It's two digits. Mm-hmm. Without a decimal point, but hey, it's in the higher two. Oh, it's $80. After 40 something years of work, I think we can amortize that into being not quite minimum wage.
it's not quite there.
But just the fact that there were any royalty anyway. We're getting off topic because we have your new book, which we should talk about. We should also tell people that if they pledge to WBAI, if you become a subscriber in the next hour and 15 minutes, you can get an ebook version of this book. Up to 5 people can do that, with huge thanks going out to Joe Monti. I assume it was Joe that you spoke with.
Correct. He was our acquiring editor at Saga Press for this book,
which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster.
Correct.
Joe used to be one of the curators of the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, which the latest one of which occurred last night.
Yes, a lot of ties in the community.
With Sabrina Vervulius and some guy named Terrence Taylor, whose latest thing is that he's in a book called...
What the Grolix is That?
How about that? And, I should just mention, by the way, that November is hopping. We have another NERSIF reading coming up in but 2 weeks on November... I think it's the 15th, 2 weeks from Tuesday, two weeks from yesterday, and our readers will be Sonia Tafe. I don't know if either of you are from John, you must know her work.
Mm-hmm. I've published her work before.
Oh, you have? Okay, she's a wonderful writer and a very good reader, and Kidge Johnson, who, of course, you don't know. So that's on Tuesday, November 15th, here at 388 Atlantic Avenue. Free admission, donations strongly encouraged, also because we lost a lot of money last night. But hey, it's still worth doing. And then December 12th, it's the Ellen and Delia Show, our annual family event. And I'm sure that either of you can name Ellen and Delia. Kushner and Sherman.
Of course.
I'll spare you the embarrassment.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I blanked on jumping in there.
Yeah, well, she was host. Ellen was host last December, was it? Of
Queers Destroy Fantasy?
Yes, yeah, because she could have been either Queers Destroy Fantasy or Women Destroy, but she can't be a person. This year is People of Color. Destroy This or That, which is a feature of Lightspeed magazine. Very popular one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we just we're wrapping up the series with People of Color Destroy Fantasy in December. Having had women destroy science fiction, fantasy, and horror, and then queers destroy science fiction, fantasy, and horror, and people of color having previously already destroyed science fiction and horror, and now fantasy is the last thing on the chopping block, and then we're gonna get out of the game, get out of the destructive game. But it's been a good run. And I feel like we did a lot of, we published a lot of great material.
It's a trilogy in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do we know, dare I ask on the air, this is really improper, who the host in December will be?
That's an excellent question, Jim. I should definitely get back to you about that.
Okay, yeah. Well, I have ideas.
Yes, yes. We definitely have ideas.
If it's an East Coast person, I can record them. If it's a West Coast person, Skyboat,
yes,
can record them. But let's make sure that one of us records them, because on a few occasions we had people record themselves. Although Cecil Beaton did a great job recording himself, but that's what he does.
Yeah. I'm going to make a note right now to make sure I do that, so I don't forget anymore. But
yeah. You and I should talk like later this week.
Yeah. By the way, just before we move on, I was going to say, speaking of ebooks edited by me and Doug, actually one of our other anthology that we edited together called Oz Reimagined is actually on sale for the entire month of November for only 99 cents.
So if anybody
wants to check out that,
that's for the Kindle only, just to clarify.
My only problem with Kindle on my devices, which are smaller devices, is that it always fully justifies the text. Mm-hmm. You can't get flushed left. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I don't have a Kindle, so I use the Kindle Reader.
But for 99 cents, I'm sure you'll forgive a lot.
For 99 cents, you can read Ken Liu, you can read... Who are some of the other people?
Yeah, Jonathan Mayberry, Shauna McGuire, Rachel Swirsky...
Robin Wasserman, Jeffrey Ward, Theodora Goss.
Fabulous collection.
Also an introduction by Gregory Maguire, who wrote Wicked.
Yes. And you see that if one December, if I can get him to do it, he lives in Connecticut. Mm. If I can get him and his husband into an Yersif reading for a December reading. His husband is an artist, a major artist. And Andy Newman, I think his name is. And I mean, you know, his artwork sells in the tens of thousands for each piece of work. And when we were at the Soho Gallery, which is where we held the book launch that Douglas hosted for Oz Reimagined, I would have put his artwork around.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we're at the Brooklyn Commons on Atlantic Avenue, we might still try to work something out. Oh, here's a weird confluence for each of you. Jeff Ryman.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me. Had a cough there. Jeff Ryman has adopted... He's a gay gentleman. I use the G word. I don't like the Q word being of a certain age when it was a derogatory term.
Okay.
Sam Miller and I talk about this on the air all the time. It's a generational thing. Jeff is a gay gentleman who has adopted two Cambodian children and therefore is very, very much into Cambodian hip-hop.
Mm.
Well, guess what? Same is true for Gregory Maguire.
Oh, really?
Now, and both of them have written in the Worlds of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jeff wrote Was,
mm-hmm.
which is such a great novel.
I haven't read it, but I've heard very good things.
Oh, you must. Bring a hanky. Yeah, it's
duly noted.
It's a three-hanky read. Four being, you know, absolute floods of tears at the end. But let's get to the book at hand, which while we're... Okay, so the ebook of Oz Reimagined is 99 cents where? At Amazon?
Correct.
Yeah, at Amazon, because it's only available on Kindle and ebook, and but for the entire month of November.
Well, yeah, that's... I mean, people can probably buy it elsewhere at full price.
Absolutely. If you want to, you know, get the paperback or there's also an audio edition. So, yeah, you have other options. But if you have the Kindle and it's 99 cents, that's clearly
the best
option. Oh,
come on. Even if you have the other ones, or even if you have hard copy or you have the Kindle, 99 cents. Get the ebook. It's portable.
Well, you're not going to hear me argue.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. Now,
I mean, you should really buy like 4 or 5 copies. I mean, you know, if we're being honest, I mean, it's only 99 cents.
Well, exactly. And oh my God, it's holiday season. Actually, you know, that's a pretty good idea. I mean, now that you mention it, I'm just thinking of a number of people I can gift.
That's an excellent idea.
It really is. If in November you can get it at 99 cents, imagine what a great gift that is. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't be saying this because it sounds like I'm shilling, but I'm not. I'm actually thinking I'm going to do this.
Well, we appreciate your business.
Oh, but actually, I doubt you're going to get a lot of residuals on that. Amazon appreciates my business in this case. Primely.
There we go.
But the book at hand, if we had a physical copy here, which we don't, we're looking at it on a screen at johnjosephadams.com/WTF. Which, I don't know whose initials that is, but Grawlick's that.
Exactly.
This is the new anthology, current anthology, and the ebook is available for like $7.99 through Saga Press, or you can pay $25 to WBAI. Isn't that a bargain? And you can get a free copy of a $7.99 book. Ebook, that is. Well, look, the difference is that you're supporting listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City if you donate that money. And becoming that $25 will make you a full member of WBAI, which means that when we have elections of the board that tell us what to do at this place whereupon we go to war, you can vote for who the listener members of that board will be. So, and also you're simply supporting listener-sponsored radio, which is a rare thing. Remember that NPR, as good as it can be, is government radio. NPR is a government agency. People forget that. And so as wonderful as they can be, they are limited in what they can do. And we're far to the left of them, let's face it, gang. So, donate $25 to WBAI and do that by calling area code 516-620-3602 and tell them that you want and then there are those characters, but if they simply look up what the in their database, an Hour of the Wolf, they should find it. If they do not, and you give $25 to BAI, send me an email, jim@ourwolf.com, HOURWOLF, and I will make sure that the premium on your gift to WBAI and our gift to you in exchange is honored. How's that? So once more, the phone number, 516-620-3602. John and Doug, why should people care about this wonderful book?
Well, I guess the best way to make y'all care is give you a little bit of background so you understand why this title is what it is and exactly what the book is.
Grawlick's the book is, yes.
That too. So it's an anthology, horror, and we have 20 stories in there.
It's, well, okay. I'd call it dark fiction, dark fantasy.
Dark fantasy, dark fiction, horror, yes.
Because we've had a couple of those stories on Nightmare, have we not?
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly know Terrence Taylor's story in there. And I wouldn't, while Terrence writes a lot of horror, his story is simply dark.
Yeah, if you want to just say it's all dark fiction with a speculative twist, then that would cover all the bases. So there's 20 of those stories.
It's a timely story for this time of year, Samhain just being over now.
Absolutely. And in every story, one character is guaranteed to use the title phrase within the story. And where you have the symbols, the Groliks, the author can replace that with whatever word or words they want. So you could get, what the heck is that? What the hell is that? What the words we can't say on the air is that?
What the Carlin is that? Yes, it's a tabula Groliks.
Exactly. So that is the basic premise of how it came to be is kind of like a story unto itself. I write about that a lot in the introduction. I don't want to hog all the airtime, though, so maybe John wants to talk a little bit about how this all came about.
Sure. Well, there was this meme online a while back where there was this new anthology, there was this new collection of H.P. Lovecraft's work that had come out from like HarperCollins or something like that, and they had just released a new cover. It was like Mike Mignola cover, and it was just called like Tales of H.P. Lovecraft or something like that. Just sort of generic like that. And so the cover was going around, and so somebody decided to take it and they photoshopped it and they removed the title and they retitled it, because like the monster, like the Cthulhu that was on the cover was just like really like crazy looking, like a crazy looking monster, you know? And so somebody had photoshopped out the title and they changed the title to just like, what the F is that, you know? They didn't censor it, you know? So it was just like, what the F is that on the cover of the book? And they put some like made up blurbs on it. So like they have a blurb from Stephen King ostensibly saying, I don't know what the F is going on, and so it was just like a silly joke that somebody did, but it was like a kind of a popular meme that got circulated all around the internet. So Doug had the idea to, take that meme and turn it into an anthology. So that was the basis of how the project started. But then it went through some trials and tribulations. Doug was originally going to co-edit this with a different editor, and she had to drop out. And then so I stepped in, and originally the book was going to be all Cthulhu or all H.P. Lovecraft related fiction. And then when I came on board, I said, oh, well, hey, maybe it would be more fun if we, allowed people to write, Cthulhu fiction, but also allowed people to do other types of monsters too, because I think that would be more interesting given the fun of the phrase that we had to work with. The title also was in flux for quite a bit too, because we were originally going to just use the F word right in the title. One of the contributors had a concern about that, given that he writes some young adult fiction. I came up with I think I suggested this, right, Doug, to put the Groliks in there, or
What happened was you said, yeah, what if we just took the letter F and then we used those symbols afterwards?
Oh, right.
And I
thought
that was a great idea, but I misunderstood you, and I thought you said that we should use just symbols.
Right.
And then when we got on the same page, we were both like, oh, well, let's just do all symbols. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and then so that So then that also made it so that it makes it easier for the authors to just substitute any word they want into that phrase, instead of having everybody have to all use the same one, like, oh, what the F is that, or whatever. It sort of opened up the door to make even more variety possible in the anthology. Admittedly, it's all kind of a silly concept in some respects to sort of base an anthology around, but like it generated a really interesting book. It's like, because the framework was so sort of loose, that gave all the writers a lot of freedom to just go in all these different directions. So I think like when you pick up this book, like you really don't know what to expect from story to story, like from one story to the next, it's just like completely different. I think that makes for a really interesting anthology to read, because you sort of get surprised just like the characters in the stories do, because you really don't have any idea what to expect. Like if it was a vampire anthology, or if it was specifically a Cthulhu anthology, for instance, it's like you would have some inkling of how these stories are going to go or how they're going to resolve. I think that just opened up the doors to, allow almost anything to happen.
So I'll jump in and add a couple of extra details here. One of them, you know, one of the most common questions that writers and editors get is, where do you get your ideas from? So,
Schenectady.
Schenectady, yes. It came from Schenectady. That is Jim referring to a story by, I think it was...
Barry Longyear.
Barry Longyear.
Yeah, but there's actually, before Barry Longyear, there was a, well, I don't want to use the word meme, but there was... For years and years and years, people would say, where do you get your ideas from? And somebody, I'm not sure whom, came up with, well, there's a post box in a private place in Schenectady, and whenever a science fiction writer has difficulty coming up with the story, they go there and they take the story out. And that's why Barry Longyear used the title It Came From Schenectady.
Oh, that's great. But, as I was saying,
no problem.
You know, here we're outlining exactly how the idea came about, but I'll throw in one more tidbit. John had said how this was getting passed along in social media back when it was a meme. And, you know, I had seen it a couple of times, like maybe on Twitter, maybe on Facebook, whatever. And then a few months go by and someone posted again and they were saying, oh, this would be the greatest poster ever. And this was back when... it said, what the F curse is that? And just as a joke, I said on Facebook in a comment, you know, forget the poster, make it a horror anthology, 20 stories, and in every story, one character is guaranteed to say, what the F-bomb is that? And just the response I got in the comments in that field made me stop and say, wait a minute, I should actually do this. People sound like they actually want to read this. And that's how this started coming about. And the other thing that's really interesting, John mentioned really quickly that the original cover with those H.P. Lovecraft stories featuring Cthulhu, who, by the way, I'm sure most of our readers know, but if not...
Well he's radio, so we can't assume that.
Okay.
He's one of the elder gods from Lovecraft, many tentacled... who come up and eat the cabin in the wood that you're staying in.
Exactly.
Something like that.
So that's like H.P. Lovecraft's iconic creation, and Lovecraft is considered one of the great practitioners of horror. But anyway, John had mentioned how the original cover for that book was done by Mike Mignola, who, if you've ever seen the movie Hellboy, Mike Mignola created Hellboy as a comic, and then it became a movie. So we managed as... making this very circular and things coming full circle. The crazy cover to our book now features an original illustration by none other than Mike Mignola. So, you know, of all people to possibly get to do our cover, because it went from a book of reprinted stories to a meme to an original book, now we have Mike Mignola doing the cover. So that was just like the icing on the cake for us.
If only we'd have gotten Stephen King to give us a blurb.
That would have been nice, too, but Mike Mignola's no slouch.
Did any of you get to buy the artwork?
You know what? The opportunity hasn't come my way, but as you know, I was at a NERSIF reading a couple of months ago for Space and Time.
The 50th anniversary.
Correct, right? And there was an artist there who had done a number of cover illustrations.
Alan F. Beck,
and one of his original...
I really need to have him on the show, but we'll figure out a way to display his covers and new radio.
Yeah, that'd be great, I would think, because I really like a lot of his illustrations, and maybe I'm a little biased because...
He's also a really, really, really nice person.
He seems that way.
Yeah, he lives about 5 blocks from here.
Oh, wow. And one of his illustrations there happened to be an illustration to a story I had in Space and Time. So while I was there...
As a writer.
Yes. So while I was there, I did buy some original artwork. But I haven't had the chance to buy a Mike Mignola original, and I'm sure it would cost me a pretty penny if I did have that chance.
Well, maybe you could get a print.
Maybe. maybe we'd get the editor discount. Who knows?
But it's not uncommon. I am familiar with a few writers... who have gotten high-quality prints and then signed by the original artists of the artwork for their own books.
Okay.
Who is in this book, Jim asked.
So glad you asked, Jim. We have stories in here from people such as Laird Barron, Amanda Downham, Scott Sigler, Simon R. Green, Jonathan Mayberry, Grady Hendrix, Tim Pratt, Alan Dean Foster. So we have a mix of people that write horror.
Okay, I have to say one of the names because I learned to say it for Lightspeed magazine, An Oumayela.
Very nicely done, Jim.
Well, I had, because of John, I had to learn to say An Oumayela. And you keep buying stories from An.
Yes.
I am purposefully avoiding An refers to itself as a neutrois. Neutrois. It's gender free. So, neutrois. Trois as in the French word for three. Why it's three, I don't know. German has a neutral gender in the language, but for some reason, the people who choose to be gender free chose French.
Yes, well, these answers would be for someone more steeply versed in French than I. But I think we have a terrific mixture of
Gemma Files, Terrence Taylor, Adam Troy Castro, Rachel Swirsky, Alan Dean Foster, Deserina Boscovich, Isabel Yap. Did you mention Maria Devana Headley? The divine Maria Devana Headley?
It's possible we mentioned her. Shauna McGuire, D. Thomas Minton, Christopher Golden, John Langan.
Really, really just top-notch writers. Pardon me, I keep doing that. I am not deeply into visceral horror. Although I have to audio edit Lightspeed magazine. And I'm always finding like, oh my God, this is actually really good.
Yeah, well, you know.
There's a lot of that in this book.
I like to think so. I mean, horror isn't my first love, but I love all sorts of speculative fiction, and horror is no exception. A lot of people, when they hear horror, they just think blood and guts and slasher,
exactly.
Like you said, visceral. And there really isn't that much.
What I call gornography.
Right. Or splatterpunk is what some people call it.
Yeah, but what a word that I learned from Sonny Moraine, body horror.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Is the term that she and Ellen Datlow use.
Okay.
So, which is, and I, you know, the name completely explains.
Absolutely. But we actually don't have that much of that now that I think about it. You know, there is a little bit of blood here and there, but you know what? Science fiction and fantasy have a little bit of blood here and there. But it's very psychological.
And that's why I said it's really, a lot of it is dark fantasy.
Fair enough.
John?
My preference for dark fiction is to go along. Like I with Nightmare, my ethos is sort of towards the quiet horror type of horror that that's a term that Charles Grant used frequently back in the day. So it's like, you know, like Doug was saying, is like a lot of people, when they think of horror, they think of slasher movies and blood and guts and all that kind of thing. And so they expect that when they see something that's labeled horror in literature, they think that it's going to be like that. But there's actually, I mean, I feel like there's very little horror fiction that is like that. It's like it tends to be much more thoughtful and, psychologically oriented horror than what you would imagine from movies.
Right. I just have to interject that the single most gory, visceral horror reading that we had at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, where the curator was in fact Joe Monte, was by Charles Grant.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, this involved somebody hooking up the tail of a gas exhaust in an automobile with a pipe and attaching the other end to somebody's anal cavity I'm not going to continue this mm-hmm. description, but the story continues from there with graphic description. So that story is absolutely horrifyingly, unforgettably vivid.
So suffice it to say, it's a bit ironic that he coined the term quiet horror.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, well, yeah. I guess that was not an example.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that he sticks to that.
Yeah.
Clearly not.
Clearly not. And his reading, he has such glee in his face. Oh. Hmm. That was over 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And God, does that...
He was actually one of my teachers at the Odyssey Workshop all the way back in 2000.
Wow. Huh. He's very good.
I did not know that.
He's very... I mean, I'm chortling and bringing all of this up, I have to say he's quite brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I got a lot out of him when at that writing workshop, so I was very appreciative.
I got to interview him at a ReaderCon, and that wasn't the scary part. The scary part, and I won't explain why this is scary, but you and John will understand, is that the program director there was Rose Fox.
Mm-hmm.
So in front of her, I had to interview Charles Grant.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
I don't know. Let's just say, gee, no, there's no romantic attachment.
Understood.
We'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that. Because I've never heard. Well, actually, I have seen other connections, but they downplay it. I've already said too much, but that was a great time, and he was such a brilliant interview. He really was. But anyway, are there any stories that had any particular, I won't say which is better or anything like that, that's not fair, but any particular personal meaning for either of you?
Personal meaning?
Yeah, did it hit you in a particular way?
I would say Alan Dean Foster's story hit me in a certain way just because it was so unexpected.
Oh, God, I made such an error. It was Charles Platt, not Charles Grant.
Okay, well, mm-hmm. I still had the pleasure of working with Charles Grant.
Yes, but it was still Charles Grant, I think. Jim, somebody's writing me on Facebook, you see. When you say you were there, you're talking about ReaderCon, right? As opposed to the NERSIF reading. Because there were actually, the NERSIF reading was extremely underattended. His co-reader was Richard Bowes.
Oh, okay. I know Rich. He's a good guy.
Well, yeah. I haven't seen him in hours. Okay. And Jim is responding to me now. You see the little thingies going up and down, indicating that somebody is writing you at that very moment.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Facebook fan, but there are certain things about... No, it was... You were at the NERSIF reading. No way I'd forget that story. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So, yeah, that was a memorable story. Okay, so anyway, go on.
Okay, well, I was...
And thank you, Jim, for correcting me. He does that a lot.
Okay, well...
I give him reason. I give him cause, I should say.
There you go. But for me, it was Alan Dean Foster's story called Castle Weep, and it's just this dark exploration of slavery, and... He actually had visited Africa and had seen some slave stations there, and he was able to apply some of his knowledge from the visit to the writing, and it gave it a very authentic feel, and it was a very slow build, and the direction he took it in was very powerful to me. So, and the way it ended was very powerful, very resonant. So there was one story that kind of stuck with me, and I mean, all these stories stuck with me in one way or the other. After reading them however many times I did, they're all like my children. But Alan Dean Foster's story kind of hit a nerve with me. I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, and I agree with that one as well. Like, I mean, I would be tempted to mention that one too. But otherwise, I would say I really enjoyed Seanan McGuire's story. It's called hashtag Connolly House, hashtag We Shouldn't Be Here. And as you might guess from the title, it's told in a series of tweets, which, you know, that can come off as kind of gimmicky from time to time if you see a story like that. But, like, it really worked well in this particular case. Like, it's like... people going to investigate a haunted house, like it's kind of feels like they're like a reality show or something, or like but it's just on Twitter, and so it's like they're going to visit this like supposedly haunted house, but then like all this, you know, terrible weird stuff keeps happening, and it works really well to build that tension throughout the story as they continue to explore and they're continuing to tweet. And you know, it's like there's this level, because of the Twitter interface, there's like this sort of level of normalcy that you feel like is there, but it really isn't because of all the weird stuff that's going on. So I feel like that one did a really great job. And also Grady Hendrix's story was really interesting. He does this really interesting thing where he has like these like sort of like dual narratives almost that merge together, and it's a really interesting trick to pull off. So I really admired the craft of that one in particular.
I'd also add, just like Seanan's story is almost like a microcosm of the anthology. John mm-hmm. said to everyone just now how, you know, on the surface it seems like it might be gimmicky, but then you read it and you realize, hey, this is a substantial story.
It's transcending the gimmick.
Right. And just like, I think if you look at our title, you think, oh, this might be really gimmicky. You know, this sounds silly and it's supposed to be a horror anthology. And then when you read the stories, you see there's a lot of horror here. The people that wrote these stories, they have something to say. So, you know, I don't think there's a story that can represent that thought better than Seanan's, just because they have a similar trajectory for that thought process.
That sounds good. Let me remind listeners that if you would like to donate money to WBAI, $25, which will make you a subscriber for the duration of this show, we have 5 ebook copies of What the Bleep Is That, or What the Grolix Is That, or insert your favorite word, preferably one of the 7 there. And give a phone call to area code 516-620-3602 or visit give to WBAI.org, and you can, you know, like choose your favorite show. We know it's mine. And you can choose the premium there. If for some reason you cannot, because this was entered very, very last minute, and I have to obviously we have to thank Joe Monti at Saga Press and Doug and John for making this available. But I also have to thank Tony Bates, the current program manager, as opposed to program director of WBAI, and Andrea Katz, for making this premium available exceedingly last minute. The deadline is usually about a week before the broadcast, but they all took major time out of their day to make this premium available. So the way to do that, area code 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602, or give to WBAI.org, or just go to WBAI.org. But then you're going to be doing lots and lots and lots of clicking. But hey, some people like to click.
Jim, if I could just add a quick little something, and thanks to your bosses for working with us to give your listeners a chance to sample our wares. Speaking of sampling our wares, if your listeners want a better idea of our anthology, they could also visit our website for the book, which has a couple of free reads on it. So if you go to
complete stories, they're not just like
correct
first chapter, first paragraph,
full short stories that are in the book. So you could go to www.johnjosephadams.com/WTF/free-reads, and there are links there to several stories that you can read in their entirety. And if you like what you read and you want to read more, we also have easy links to follow on the website to buy the book.
Yeah, and you can actually listen to three of the stories.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. As well. Although I do not recall who the readers on those RRs. Who's Drowned Face Sleeps by Rachel Swirsky and on Owomayela? I think that was Paul Bamer. Does that sound right to you, John?
It's Gabrielle DeCure.
Oh, it's Gabrielle. Gabrielle DeCure. Fabulous performer. And Little Widow. Now, that was actually relatively recently, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And if I was to click it here. Oh, actually, I. Oh, you don't have a link to the podcast there, John.
Yeah, I need to update the website.
Yeah. Oh, I see. That's the only one you don't, because that was actually just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Little Widow. That was a good story. Oh, that was a good story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we appreciate that, Jim. And I'm sure Maria would as well.
Yes, and I'll talk to her about it.
Excellent.
She's right here in Brooklyn, so. Which I had no idea. I was editing her stories and stuff like that, and then I just met her, and it's like, wow, I didn't know you were here.
Yeah, all these years I've been living in New York, I haven't had the pleasure of meeting her yet.
Yeah, but she read for us at the New York, well, after I met her, I arranged to have her with Terrence Taylor, two people who are represented in this anthology, read together last March.
Okay. Well, New York is
February or March.
New York is definitely representing in this anthem.
Yes, absolutely. There. Who else is in New York? Serena Boscovich is near here, right?
She used to be. She moved, but John Langan's in New York, I think.
No, he's upstate.
But that's still New York.
Well,
not New York City.
Listen, I grew up in Queens. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. When you're from New York, you're from New York City. If you want to talk about that other place upstate, we'll secede. We'll become the 51st state.
All right, fine. And Grady Hendrix is in New York City.
Very good.
And Terrence Taylor.
And Terrence Taylor, about 20 blocks from here, yeah. I almost thought, when I realized he was in the book, I almost thought of dragging him here. But then none of the three of us would get a word in. Anyway. No, I shouldn't say that. Also, Terrence is very busy with work. He's a freelancer. And it's Feast or Famine. He's the tech director also for the New York Review of Science Fiction Reading. So,
okay.
And a regular visitor to this show.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. So, and very often, if I take the bus here, I actually can meet him on the bus en route from where I am in Brooklyn to where he is, and the bus stops right in front, kitty corner from here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, extremely convenient, as a matter of fact.
Nice.
Yeah, it is, except it doesn't run after midnight. But, hey, what of that? So, yeah, there's a lot of New York representation here. And if you want to include New York State, John is in New Paltz.
Along with Laird Barron, and one of your co-editors is also a New Yorker. I'm born and raised, and these days I'm currently in Astoria, Queens.
Okay. And I'm originally from Jackson Heights.
Oh, neighbors. So,
yes, pretty much. And Max Schmid, who just left here, who's our ops person at this hour, lives in Astoria. So,
okay.
My only question then always is, so how far are you from the studio?
What, Kaufman Studios?
Yes.
I can walk there in about 25 minutes.
Yeah,
and I work there sometimes, since when I'm not publishing, I'm gripping.
Ooh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
I've been doing it for about 3 years now.
Get
so.
A grip, yeah. So you know where I can get good gaffer's tape. That's
yes, I do. That stuff is expensive.
It really is, but a roll lasts me about 10, 15 years.
Yes.
So I'm willing to lay out that money, because forget duct tape.
Oh, that's cheap stuff compared to gaffer's tape.
Yeah, but also in terms of quality.
Oh, absolutely.
Gaffer's tape, there is nothing like gaffer's tape. I once fixed the roof of a car with gaffing tape.
I believe it.
It's absolutely true. And one of my first jobs at WBAI as a flunky would be to gaff down cables during a concert or something like that, and to just make sure nobody would trip over the wires. But a grip doesn't lay down. That's a best boy, I think, who does the gaffing, right?
The gaffers in New York, that's more the electrical side of things. For grips, like the head boss would be the key grip, and then the second in command would be the best boy. The gaffer is in charge of the electrics.
Okay. And the so being a grip, what is it exactly that you do as a grip?
We work with the lighting a lot on sets. We help set up various equipment to get the right camera, to help with the camera angles and to control the flow of light.
So it's got more to do with light than with sound.
Much more to do with light than sound.
Okay.
We in New York, you can also be putting together the sets that the carpenters make. We could also be rigging stuff where basically that just means that the set's going to have something really complicated and there's not enough time for the shooting grips to put it together on set at the time because time is money. So we might have to black out a bunch of windows in advance. We might have to set up equipment in advance. So, you know, it's varied. You know, you could also be pushing the dolly. The dolly is basically just a wheel device where they have the cameras on it, and there's various types of dollies. So grips have to be multifaceted.
Which goes back to D.W. Griffith. D.W. Griffith was the first person to use a dolly in cinema.
That I did not know.
Aha! He and then, of course, Cecil B. DeMille, and each one claimed to be the first. But yes. It really was, they figured it out that it was Griffith and Mary Pickford.
I actually want to write a story about gripping and make it a horror story.
Ooh!
Yeah, just like Night of the Grips, you know? Just something horrific arise. Maybe it's Cthulhu creatures, maybe it's zombies, but whatever it
you
is.
You can set it in Astoria Studios and have the Marx Brothers haunt you.
Something like that. And the grips basically just have to use their gripping skills to hold the creatures at bay. So
for
a little bit of tongue-in-cheek.
For those people who don't know, Astoria Studios, the Kaufman Studios, which I always hoped were named after George S. Kaufman, but no, he only directed there, was Paramount Pictures. When New York was still the capital of the movie industry, the whole entertainment industry, before people went west to Hollywood, there was the Vitagraph and Vitaphone Studios, which became National and Warner Brothers, were in Brooklyn. And I don't remember who it was in the Bronx. One of the major studios was up in the Bronx. But in Queens, in Astoria, Queens, Paramount Pictures. And the building was shuttered for a very long time. But I got a press invitation, 25, 30 years ago, to go and be in the room where the movie The Coconuts was filmed with the Marx Brothers. And it was to announce the reopening of the studios. Oh, and Animal Crackers. And Animal Crackers was also filmed there, the second Marx Brothers film. And so we saw a double feature of both movies in this humongous studio. It was before people really started renting the space out. And before, in those days, Silver Cup made bread.
Silver Cup actually just opened a new studio in the Bronx.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really growing. But I remember, you're probably not old enough, but I remember riding the 7 train and smelling the Silver Cup bread.
No, that's not a memory in the files.
Yeah, so you're probably more like, oh, I remember the fight on the rooftop of that building in Highlander.
Oh, that was on top of that building?
Absolutely.
I was not aware.
That was one of the first on-camera uses identifying what was going on. Yeah, that was all.
Anytime I hear Highlander, the first thing that always goes through my head is, there can be only one!
Yes, exactly.
So,
and there can only be one WBAI in New York City at 99.5 FM. Had to do that.
Definitely
somehow.
Done, Jim.
Thank you. Oh, you can always do that. You know, and speaking of blah, 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 this is... It's easy. But I do have to mention that the telephone number to call and pledge to WBAI is 516-620-3602. Pledge 25 clams, or better yet, $25, because clams cost about $2 each. And you can get a copy, an ebook version of what the Gravlax is that. I said it wrong, didn't I? You know what I think? It's a Grawlix. You know what I think Gravlax is? I think it's a kind of smoked salmon. I think, you know, I'm getting hungry, so I want a Gravlax sandwich. What the Grawlix is that? What the bleep is that? Is an equally good title for the book, edited by John Joseph Adams and Douglas Cohn, who are guests here on Hour of the Wolf. I am Jim Freund. The book is published, and the copies of the ebook copies of the book donated by Joe Monti, who is the editor at, yes, what's
wrong? I don't even remember a picture being taken.
I've taken about 10 pictures of you so far this morning.
You've been very sly about it, Jim.
Sly? I held the camera like this.
I thought you were just checking your email.
It's on Facebook. People who say, okay, yes, I happen to agree with this person who writes to say, people who say www make me think of those souls that feel a need to mime a phone with extended fingers in order to show us that they are using this odd thingamagigget known as a telephone. Well, yeah, but may I point out that most people still talk about dialing a phone. And most of those people have probably never seen a phone dial in their lives. But yes, it's true. And I say this to everybody. There is no need ever, 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 ever to say WWW. Or what Douglas Adams used to call treble U.
Fair enough.
Yeah, go to your preferred browser and type in the name of your preferred website and omit the WWW. Almost every DNS server in the world ignores that.
Oh, you're 100% right. I just sit out of habit sometimes. It's a tough one to break.
People do. But, then, you know, the people here on this radio station who say www.wbai, it's like, didn't you have enough W's? And besides, they rarely say W. They say www, you know, like talking about George Bush. But, yeah. So it's johnjosephadams.com/WTF. Right?
Yeah.
That was just for John. I wasn't like challenging you. but our listener on Facebook, whose name resembles a city in Texas, I don't like to give people's name on the air unless they tell me I can say their name on the air explicitly. It's not proper. It might even be illegal. I'm not sure about that. Privacy issues.
I can understand that.
Such and such a person said so and so forth, but that was a private email to me. Actually, it wasn't an email. It was a Facebook message, but you know what I mean. So I get coy.
Understood.
And in this case, the person's first name would be exceedingly identifiable. So I tend to stay away from that. But anyhow, that's a minor point. But yeah, I never say www. And I sometimes point out to people, don't do it.
Well, now I'm going to be all self-conscious about going forward. Probably never say it again. So mission accomplished, Jim.
Well, that was the point. You know, you don't have to tell people http://, and now you can add to that, and you also don't need to say www.
I think I'm now going to be one of those people that tells everyone else not to say www.
Good. It's infectious. It's infectious.
Much like zombies in horror.
There you go.
I'm just trying to bring it all full circle.
Yeah, it's a Scott Edelman thing, right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, indeed. I should probably... when in doubt, repeat the phone number, 516-620-3602 for those moments when there's an awkward silence, which I created, of course. I'm very good at that.
Oh, things can never be awkward with you, Jim.
Oh, no. This and other conversation stoppers can be yours if you call right now.
For just $19.95.
Yes. Or in this case, $25 even.
There you go.
And, or you can also go to www.givetowbai.org.
Now, Jim, you know that those W's are completely extraneous and unnecessary.
Okay, go to BAI. No, that doesn't work. No, you're right. It's the trouble you.
There you go.
It's the trouble you. You know, one time I had Douglas Adams on the air, and he was on about four or five times, and he was talking about his website when he TDV, the Digital Village, was a company he was starting, and he would say, "Yes, the address is TreableUTDV.com," and I thought that was just so cool. And a couple of years later, when I saw him, where he came in to New York to promote his game Starship Titanic, I said, "By the way, I've been trying to coin Trouble You, you know, in front of a web name." And he said, "What does that mean?" I said, "Trouble You, www. It's yours. You told it to me." And he had no recollection of it.
So it's just a throwaway line for him, and you thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, but that was Douglas Adams, who was brilliant.
There you go.
What do you guys think of the new version of Dirk Gently?
I really like it.
So do I. I was going to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
I did not care for the British version.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any of the adaptations.
Yeah, they just pulled it offline. It was on Acorn TV.
Mm-hmm.
And Netflix never picked it up, because by the time Netflix could have, the new series with Frodo went into production. Elijah Wood is co-star.
Right.
And I was just all set to really, really dislike it, as I disliked the television version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, despite having a wonderful cast. I actually liked the movie, most of it. But I think that this Dirk Gently is very good, and I'm shocked.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect, but I was really happy with the first two episodes.
Yeah.
I actually haven't seen it yet, so can't comment.
You have a treat ahead of you.
Sounds good.
It is recommended. It is weird. It is fun. And even though it is written by, of all people, Max Landis, son of John Landis, author of over 100 screenplays and an enfant terrible, because he's young and people think that as son of John Landis, he's entitled. And maybe he is, but that doesn't change the fact that he's good.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the author and showrunner of this series, an American, and yet his dialogue reeks of Douglas Adams.
Mm-hmm.
And Douglas Adams, to me, is all about dialogue, because, after all, Hitchhiker's Guide was a radio show before it was anything else.
Very true.
Something that a lot of other people feel. Oh, yeah, I loved the book. Yeah, that was a good adaptation. Okay, Austin Gill, who gave us the tweet before, the thing before, said, "Just don't call him Dallas Houston." Fair enough, Austin. Thank you. I just don't like to use people's names without permission.
Better safe than sorry.
Yeah. So what have you folks been enjoying in books and media?
Well, lately I've been enjoying Westworld. I never saw the original movie.
Oh my God.
With Michael Crichton, from Michael Crichton, I believe.
Yeah, Michael
it was.
Crichton. I think he directed it as well.
Yeah,
as
he did.
I think so. But this has made me curious enough that I definitely have to check out the original movie at some point.
No, don't.
No?
No, don't.
Oh, well, I might do it anyway with John's warning in mind.
They're largely unrelated. However, yeah. The movie has its own milieu and charm. I wouldn't call it a really good movie, but Yul Brynner plays his character from The Magnificent Seven magnificently, and Richard Benjamin is always fun.
Okay, but
I will say it is worth it. It is, I guess, it is worth it to see Yul Brynner's performance. He is pretty great.
Yeah.
Okay, but I've been pretty impressed with Westworld. Doesn't surprise me, because I tend to like most of the stuff that Jonathan Nolan and his brother Christopher Nolan do. So.
Mm-hmm.
I've been tuning into
that. So you liked Person of Interest?
That one, believe it or not, I haven't seen, but I've seen almost everything else by them.
That's five seasons of, really, Jonathan Nolan, with Chris's name
right,
more at the forefront, you know, the same way that Jed Whedon and wife, Marissa, I'm forgetting her last name, oversee Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., okay, even though Joss Whedon's name is right there as producer.
But I'm really hoping it succeeds on HBO, because obviously HBO is going to be open to doing more fantasies thanks to the success of Game of Thrones. But if Westworld does well, then maybe they'll be open to doing more science fiction down the road. I think Jonathan Nolan's already working on Asimov's Foundation for them, so that could be very interesting.
Is he really? I didn't know
that. I don't know if it's going to get all the way down the line, but yes, there's something going on. I couldn't give you details.
Yeah, well,
It was in production at some point. I mean, I don't know what stage if it got, you know, greenlit to actually start shooting or anything, but and I think when I first heard about that, it was before Westworld was even announced. So I don't know if it got postponed indefinitely because of Westworld or what the status is. But
well, I'll tell you what I'm really looking forward to is American Gods.
Mm-hmm. I think that's coming to Stars.
It's
right?
coming to Stars. Yeah. It was originally, I think, going to be Showtime.
HBO, I think. Originally.
No, Showtime.
Oh, yeah?
It was Showtime. Hey, Lister, you've been preempted this morning. I'm absolutely serious. I'm dead serious.
I'm very happy.
Yeah, come in and do your show at 3. But those are the rules.
That's okay.
Those are the rules. We have been told that if somebody's preempted on an overnight show and they come in and show up for the show, they should do their show. So I'm glad that you're here, Lister, to not do your show. But you'll be doing your show instead.
I think I won't do my show because I was...
Talk into the microphone, for God's sake.
I think I won't do my show because I was thrown off a train for being a pervert when that never happened.
Well, that you weren't a pervert? I don't believe that.
Yeah. I was accused of being a pervert at...
Don't pop your peas.
Grand Central Station.
Oh, my God.
Yesterday at 5:35.
Well, you know, if you're a pervert, welcome to WBAI is all I've got to say. Perv Radio in New York City. It's where we did a bestiality show once.
What the bleep?
Yeah, well, it was called A Walk with the Beasts. It was a hoax. It was a really credible, brilliant hoax done in about, oh, God help me, 1973, and yes, I was here to listen to that, to watch it in production.
Huh.
James Ursay and Peter Zanger and David Rapkin, same people who did the WBAI radio serial of Doctor Strange, Master of the Mystic Arts. Before it was a movie, which it will be on Friday in the U.S., it's already been a movie elsewhere. We did the radio serial.
Interesting.
Yeah. One of these years we should try to get the rights.
Couldn't hurt.
Yeah.
Oh, let me jump in here with, you know, I have to also say that Westworld is great. And if you want to hear more thoughts from me about Westworld, if you go to listen to Geek's Guide to the Galaxy, we did a whole panel discussion about it with Teresa DiLucci and... Dave Kirtley, of course, and Rajan Khanna. So we did a review of the first four episodes, which we got to see actually in advance because we're super fancy like that. But other than Westworld, you guys have to watch Black Mirror. Black Mirror is great.
I've heard about that. I've been told that not every episode is great, but that a good percentage of them are, because it's an anthology series on Netflix.
Yes.
And
yeah. I mean, honestly, it kind of makes me feel inferior as a curator of short fiction because, I mean, it's like they're short stories, but on television. And, I mean, it's just, like, it's so incisive. It's, like, it's no one's doing anything like that. And I I feel inadequate when I watch it.
Well, you know, you guys should, like, do a TV series of your – not of Oz Reimagined. But of what the Grawlix, I keep doing that. Grawlix. I must have salmon on the brain. What the Grawlix is,
well,
that?
If somebody wants to offer me a TV contract, all I can say is we can definitely talk.
I know people.
Well, you know, you mentioned the American Gods TV series, and Brian Fuller is working on that. I heard he's also going to go work on this reboot of the Amazing Stories anthology series.
Yeah.
I'm like, Brian Fuller, man, I'm trying to tell you, you got to hire me. Like, you know, let's talk.
Really?
Like, call me up. Like,
because I have
thoughts. I can help.
Brian, you're spreading yourself too thin. That's why you left. That's why I think you left Star Trek.
Yeah, I know. That was a bummer. That was one of the things that, like, gave me some faith that Star Trek, the new Star Trek, might be good.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know now.
We have to tell listeners that Brian Fuller did Pushing Daisies and...
Hannibal.
Hannibal, actually, about the only show of his I didn't watch. The brilliant reboot of The Munsters called 13 Mockingbird Lane, which I thought was fabulous and unfortunately didn't go past the pilot. Wonderfalls and...
Andy worked on Star Trek before. He
got his start on Next Gen and DS9.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the... And oh, he had another series about the dead girl who becomes a Reaper.
Oh,
Dead Like Me.
Was that him too?
Absolutely him. It has all the hallmarks of his stuff.
Yeah.
And he's wonderful. And that's why I agree with you, John. I had hopes for Pushing Daisies, for Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the fact that he was working on Star Trek while he was... and by the way, Heroes. Heroes was good for the first season because he was co-producer and showrunner.
Mm-hmm.
He left and, well, Heroes left the building.
Mm-hmm.
And then came back for, like, the last half season, but it was too late. It was already Dead Like Me. And the... Thank you, Lister. That's the sign. Seven words you must not use. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And actually, of those words, only, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, actually, number 2 can be used on the air. It really pisses me off that people think you can't use that word. And number 7 is acceptable in England. When something goes, grolixed up, they would say it would be teed up. It's the four-letter T word.
Interesting.
Actually, 3-letter in the plural.
Yes, yeah. Very yeah. True.
I mean, you, it was on Class.
Okay.
Have you been watching Class?
Is that a show?
I haven't even heard of Class.
Yeah, it's a spinoff of another show called Doctor Who.
Oh no, I don't. I'm sorry to say this, and but I actually don't like Doctor Who.
Oh,
so I don't know anything about anything related.
You've been listening to John Joseph Adams on Hour of the Wolf. I'm sorry that he hung up. I'm a Whovian.
Yeah, I know. I don't have any knowledge of any of it.
Again, it's a generational thing because I watched Doctor Who when it first came to the U.S. with Tom Baker,
mm-hmm.
who was sort of like a Harpo Marx in time and space, and with the worst effects of any, you know, like, well,
yeah.
Gaffing tape and bubble wrap monsters. And there was one episode, The Ark in Space, where you could actually hear the person inside popping the bubbles and going, ow, when a piece of bubble wrap, like, poked him near an eye. Yeah. I swear it's true. And that made the show just so lovable.
Mm-hmm.
And the reboot, I enjoy it for the most part. There have been major duds in there.
I will say, despite the fact that I have basically zero knowledge about Doctor Who, I was doing this quiz for Starship Sofa one time. Like, Dave Kirtley and I went on there as the host of Geek's Guide to the Galaxy, and we were like, challenging SF Signal to like a game show quiz sort of competition, and so they were asking us all these trivia questions, and I got a Doctor Who trivia question right, and I was like, ha, I don't even watch Doctor Who, and I got this right.
I almost, sorry, go on.
No, I was just saying it felt extra. It kind of felt extra good because Starship Sof is a British show too. So it's like, you know, they actually, you know, obviously, you know, they probably care about Doctor Who very much, and so it's like, ah, I got the Doctor Who question right.
Oh, it's not as good as Lightspeed, but anyway, I was going to say, John, you would probably love Torchwood. Mm-hmm. Well, you may not care that much for Doctor Who, Torchwood, mm-hmm. which is, of course, an anagram of Doctor Who. I don't mm-hmm. know why people don't remember that. But if you take Doctor Who and you jumble the letters around, it's Torchwood. And Torchwood is a lot darker. Doctor mm-hmm. Who's biggest problem was that it didn't know whether it was a children's show, which mm-hmm. is its original mission goal for 8-year-olds, mm-hmm. but the producers wanted it to be for adults.
Right.
And so it was being torn in different directions, and that's where I think its biggest problems lay. So they said, okay, what you will do is you will infantilize, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Doctor Who, and then we will give you a very, very adult program, and that would be Torchwood. And mm-hmm. It doesn't involve the Doctor, and it's worth seeing, and it's available on various streaming, I believe, Prime services, as it were. I'm not sure if it's on Netflix or Prime, but it's one of them. Mm-hmm. And I think, John, if you gave it a try, you would find it a little bit more, it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
It's
all right, well.
It's yeah, really
maybe I'll
dark.
Try it. Yeah, I haven't even tried that one. So
is dark. I just realized, of course, Class isn't in the U.S. yet.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be on, I believe, BBC America in December.
Mm-hmm.
And it's YA, but YA complete with sex and gay themes and...
So mature YA.
It's mature YA, yeah, very much so. It's intended to appeal to people like writers like Chris Barzak and people you can probably name better than I.
Well, nothing's coming to mind at the moment, but Chris Barzak is a good example then to get the idea across for what kind of reader it might target.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got like 2 minutes left.
Well, thanks for having us on, Jim. It's been a few years since I've done the show, but
yeah, well,
it was definitely a pleasure.
Yeah, and we'll do it again. And John, likewise?
Yeah, it was good to be back on the show.
So let us tell people once again what it is, that the book that launched on November 1st. Yeah, it's what was that?
There you go.
Is that, rather. And from Saga Press. Edited by John Joseph Adams and Douglas Cohen, who are my guests on Hour of the Wolf this morning. And it is yet not too late to get an ebook copy of this if you donate $25 to WBAI, either by going give to WBAI.org, do not type the www, or your fingers will be tired by putting in 4 needless characters. I and Lister and John and Doug are 4 needless. No. Or you can telephone area code 516-620-3602. Again, area code 516-620-3602 and pledge to WBAI and say you're doing it in the name of your favorite show, which is Hour of the Wolf, and you're getting the what the bleep
is that.
And if they don't understand or know what you're talking about or you have a problem, send me an email, Jim, J-I-M, at ourwolf.com, H-O-U-R-W-O-L-F. Doug, where can people find you online for your own personal mischievousness?
You can go to... Well, we'll just skip the triple W's. DouglasCohenEditorial.com.
We win. Yes.
And I'm on Twitter every so often. My handle is Douglas_Cohen.
And John, JJA, as you sometimes know. Well,
yeah, so my... Yeah, my website's just johnjosephadams.com, and then on Twitter I'm at johnjosephadams.
Yeah, okay. And I can be found on Twitter as Jim Freund, F-R-E-U-N-D, and on Facebook in the Hour of the Wolf group or the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings group, or at OurWolf.com, an exceedingly dated website. It looks like it's from the 90s, and there's a reason for that. It's because it's from the 90s.
Ah, mystery solved.
Indeed. So, John, we're going to be hanging up on Skype shortly.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly being actually about now. And Doug, thank you so much for coming in at this hour.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jim. John, good talking with you. I'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
All right. So, as I say at the end of the Lightspeed podcasts, this comes, by the way, from an old BBS. See you on the Bitstream. Okay, so thanks, and we go out, of course, with Sails of Silver from Steel I Span, and stay tuned for the unscheduled Burn Baby Burn Clapper with Lister coming your way in just these grolixing minutes. Stay tuned, and have a good morning, and be good to each other, and vote, vote, vote like you mean it. Good morning. And good night, John.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Turn like me, they yearn for the flag too. Wake up to the lies, the pigs make up imperialistic swans that I grind into bacon bits. Call the fist cause I ain't taking shit. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Farmy, but you want me in prison cause I'm busy attacking the flag. I rag it and snag it and drag it and rip it to shreds cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy, so just hand me a flag from the fastest and watch me burn that piece up to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn.
WBAR, Burn Baby Burn. We do this each and every Thursday right here at 99 Sync WBAI Pacifica Radio at its very, very best right here. At its very best. And we're still in fundraising mode right here at 99 Sync WBAI. 516-620-3602.
Yeah.
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 Like a lion in the morning sun. You can live like a champion. Save the world we
skin, we will rise from the ashes again. Love the contribution, sing. Heal the wounded warriors. Praise the victorious. Be the one who leads us. Right from wrong will be just. All we need is your trust.
Just because of the cause
that day have come.